Welcome to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hemmerker. In each episode, she'll talk with your favorite romantic suspense authors. They will take you behind the scenes of the writing process, giving excerpts from their writing, and share stories about their writing life.
Surviving the Deal by Sarah Lynn Lewis. When billionaire developer Adam Baylor is backed into a corner, there's only one way to save the biggest deal of his life. Get married. Temporarily, no strings, no emotions, easy. Until he meets Renee Miller. Renee is a single mom, a woman of faith, and the last person Adam expected to upend his well-ordered world. But as their arrangement begins to blur the lines between business and love, secrets surface, past wounds reawaken, and deadly threat looms closer than either of them could imagine. Can a marriage built on a lie become something real? Or will the cost of the deal be more than either of them is willing to pay?
On this episode of The Romantic Side of Suspense, my guest is Sarah Lynn Lewis. She was born and raised in a small historical town in northern Ohio. And she has grandchildren, and she writes. She does telephone Bible study, which I love, and writes romantic suspense. So welcome to my show, Sarah Lynn.
Thank you.
So I have to ask, telephone. Yeah, I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you, but I have to ask, telephone Bible study? What is that?
Yes. Okay. So a number of years ago, I want to say it's probably about 15 years ago, I got a phone call from my daughter, and she said, Mom, my cousin is going through, she has cancer, and would you pray for her? And I said, yes, I'll pray for her. So in the meantime, it's been my practice to send people the book Streams in the Desert. And so I sent her Streams in the Desert along with a note saying, if she ever wanted me to pray for her or if she needed anything, just give me a call. So she did, in fact, call me, and she said, I really want to learn more about the Bible. So we started a telephone Bible study 15 years ago, and we're still doing it. And her sister has joined. And actually, that was the impetus to get me to start writing stories.
Oh, I love that. That is so great. Well, thank you for sharing that. I know it had nothing to do with writing, but I could not ask about it. So let's start.
That's okay.
Let's dive a little bit more into why romantic suspense. What drew you to write romantic suspense novels?
Okay, so, well, that's an interesting story in itself, because I've written inspirational romances. I have an inspirational romance series out with 7 books. And then I wrote a sweet and clean romance trilogy. And then I wrote a historical romance based on my grandparents' love story. And I'm thinking, okay, where do I go from here? So I was having a chat with my editor, and she said, you know, all of your stories have elements of suspense and mystery in them all the time. So you should really be writing romantic suspense. And I'm thinking, oh, well, okay, I can do that. So that's how it came about.
Oh, I love it. That's fun to do that. And so when do you find time for write? I can't talk today.
Well,
when do you find time to write? There you go.
Well, since I'm retired, you know, the world is my oyster, so to speak.
Mm-hmm.
I can write anytime I want. My husband's still working, so I usually try to write during the day. Early in the morning is much better than in the afternoon, but I've been known to do some writing in the evenings while he's watching television with his ear pods. So that's whenever I have time, I will write. But usually what I do is I've been structured for the last couple of years. I structure it so that in the middle of the week on Wednesday, since it's a church day, I usually try to do all of my bill paying, my chores or my errands and stuff on Wednesdays, because it's my short day. And I do all of my writing Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday, and I keep the weekends free.
Oh, that's lovely. So do you have anything that's absolutely essential for you to write, you know, quiet space, a favorite beverage, you know, what do you need to get you in the mood to pound those words out?
Well, you know, since I outline, I really don't need anything, but I love to listen to, like, classical music while I'm writing. Not when I'm outlining or when I'm doing character profiles or any part of the prep work that I do before I start writing the story. I do like it to be quiet, so I have my own little writing room. And I shut the door. My husband knows when the door shut, stay out.
I love that. So do you need any kind of pick-me-up to keep writing besides, like, you know, with the door shut? And do you have anything that when you get stuck that you need to do or just to kind of keep you going?
I sometimes will get up and go get, you know, a snack or something or a glass of cold water. Or I may even throw a load of clothes in the washer just to get away from it for a few minutes if I'm stuck. But usually that doesn't happen. Once I start writing and I look at my outline, I usually don't have any trouble with, oh, where am I going to go today? Unless, of course, the story goes in a different direction. And then I have to pause and say, okay, now what do I do? And that's when those things come into play.
So speaking of your stories, though, do you have any particular place that you go for inspiration? Do they just kind of ideas just kind of come to you?
Well, a lot of times, most of my stories come from my future projects folder. If while I'm writing, let's say I'm writing a story and I'm in the middle of it and I think up a new storyline. I'll take like a half an hour and write a couple paragraphs and shove it into my future projects folder. Then I go back to my future projects folder and say, oh, can I write a story about this? And that's how my stories are born. But most of the time it comes from articles. It comes from television programs. And it comes from real life. People tell me stories that, you know, about their lives. And it's like, oh, wow, I can use that in my story, or, you know, just write something down. But yeah, most of what I do is it's in my future projects folder.
Okay. So what do you think has been most rewarding about writing romantic suspense now that you've been doing it for a little while?
Well, I think the most rewarding is trying to bring a character to have the romance, suspense, and even a faith element all working synergistically to drive a story to its conclusion. I think that's probably the most rewarding part of it, is to blend all those aspects into the story and get them to a point where people are like, oh, I got to read a little bit more. I have to read a little bit more. I can't put it down. And that's kind of the exciting part of it.
Yeah, that is. And how do you ensure your books are accurate? Do you do, I'm sure you do a lot of research, but do you have like other ways that you do it besides research?
It's usually research, and I do a lot of, in fact, when I wrote the historical novel, that was probably the hardest one to write because I had to do a lot of research on, you know, what did they wear? How did they talk? You know, what kind of vehicles did they use? How long did it take to get from place to place? That kind of thing. But when you're writing contemporary novels, I use people that I know have information that I could use. For example, I had one of my stories had a helicopter pilot, and so I didn't know anything about helicopters. I've never ridden in one. I didn't know anything about them. And it just so happened one of my very good friends from church, he was a retired Navy pilot. And so he could tell me everything I needed to know about what it felt like, you know, what kind of things you had to do. And of course, not all of it, you know, came out in the book.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you do all this research and maybe you use, what, 10 or 15% of whatever you research. But that's the fun
right.
part, because you're learning something you didn't know before.
Yes. Yeah, that is totally true. And I love that you picked this as one of the potential questions. So what? Tell us what the weirdest way someone has died or been killed in one of your books.
Okay, so I haven't killed off anyone yet, but I am going to do that. But the one person in one of my novels died on the page, well, not on the page, but off screen.
Mm-hmm.
But I needed a doctor to help me figure out what I could use to fit the storyline. And so I did a little bit of research online first, and then I went to a doctor and asked him, you know, can you tell me anything about Huntington's disease? And he goes, Huntington's disease? Where'd you come up with that? And I said, well, it was had all the symptoms that I needed for him to die. And it was funny because I had never heard of Huntington's disease, never. And so I did all the research, and I talked to this doctor, and he explained to me, because he was a pulmonologist, so he knew exactly what I was talking about. And he kind of explained to me what would happen and, you know, the kind of the drugs that would be used and how the man could have possibly lost his life, which he did. And it was interesting because not long after that, I started seeing commercials on television for Huntington's disease. And
mm-hmm.
I'm like, well, what do you know? I mean, that's just interesting to me.
Yes, yeah, it's kind of weird how sometimes, you know, you start, you know, they probably were always there, those commercials or whatever, or, you know, but you just, it wasn't on your radar, so you didn't notice them.
Probably.
Yeah, I just recently read somewhere that that is what happens. You suddenly, you know, like when you're expecting your first baby, suddenly you notice babies and pregnant women all the time. They were always there. You just are heightened to notice them because your brain is thinking about that X.
That's right. That's right.
Kind of fascinating, that brain of ours. So we are almost out of time, but let's close with, what is one of your favorite ways to connect with readers? How do you like to connect with your readers?
Well, in person obviously would be the best, but that doesn't happen all that often. So I love to connect with my readers through my website and through my newsletter. And so if, you know, I have a policy that if one of my readers who reads my newsletter sends me an email, I make it my business to make sure I respond to them within 24 hours. And that's just who I am. And there are some people that write all the time, and then there are others that don't. You know, there are others that they're one-off. But and if they make a comment on my website, I make sure that I go in and I respond to the comment. And so that's kind of exciting to me to reach out to the readers there. And I love it, you know, when I send my newsletters out, and I'm sure you have this too, where they're international. There are people from all over the world reading your newsletters.
Yes.
And to me, that is just so exciting. I actually had a person from India send me an email. And so that, for me, was exciting. And I was able to, you know, send her back a message. And that to me, is exciting.
Yeah, I love that the Internet, one of the most amazing things is our ability to connect with us all over the world. So very exciting. Thank you so much for being on my show, Sarah Lynn. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Sarah. I enjoyed it as well.
Now an excerpt from Surviving the Deal by Sarah Lynn Lewis. You can't be serious. Adam Baylor's voice scraped through the conference room like steel on glass. Two of the high rollers winced. The urge to draw a finger under his fine linen shirt or loosen the $500 silk tie made him want to fist his hands in frustration. Instead, he stood and planted his palms on the massive oval table. The stale scent of polished wood and old coffee lingered in the air, a reminder of too many closed-door meetings. His office building's conference room closed in on him. Even the whoosh of the air conditioning didn't cool the heat on his skin or deal with the summer's humidity. Not even the muted hum of afternoon traffic from the Manhattan street far below could break through his thoughts. His expression must have mirrored a fish struggling to survive out of water with the way his mouth opened, then shut, then opened again. Heat spread from his chest to his neck to settle on his ears. It annoyed and infuriated him. Five distinguished-looking men seated in the luxurious chairs around the glass oval table took turns glancing at one another, then at him. Adam could almost hear a collective sigh. They all turned in unison to the second-in-command of the tiny band of wealthy power brokers who had been his father's closest friends. The self-appointed leader of the group stood and leaned over the prospectus. He punched a finger on the document sitting in front of him. "I assure you, for this kind of money, we are absolutely serious." Adam gritted his teeth. He refused to show any weakness to the men who were 30 years his senior and much wealthier than him. That alone spoke volumes. He was worth billions, but it meant zilch in the game he played right then. He raised his head and looked at one man at a time, his jaw clenched so tight his molars ached. "Would you mind telling me why?" A pulse thundered in his ears. His throat constricted like the air had been sucked from the room. That couldn't be right. His father, the man who taught him to honor commitments and value integrity, he would never sanction an arranged marriage, would he? Adam's knees nearly buckled with the weight of betrayal. Another of his investors, Carter Langdon, a weasel of a man, crossed his arms. "Very simple, dear boy. Stability." His lips twitching like he enjoyed Adam's discomfort. Beside him, Jules Becker, with his ever-present gold pen, tapped it against the table, not quite meeting Adam's eyes. With a forced smile, the leader of the group cleared his throat. "It's more than stability, Adam. It's about a promise we made to your father. He tasked us with watching over you to make sure you were married before you were too set in your ways. We all agreed with his belief that a wife eases the stress men like us face on a daily basis. Until now, we have lacked the leverage to force your hand. Now we have it." Could they have misunderstood his dad's intentions? His father couldn't have meant it the way they took it. Dad was a Christian who believed in the sanctity of marriage. So did Adam. But wedded bliss wasn't on the horizon for him. The entire situation caused an influx of acid into his throat. Even the dear boy moniker Adam had always perceived as a show of affection rankled. What made these men, who he'd known since childhood, distrust him so? His company, AB Conglomerate, made them billions of dollars. If he sat and calculated the return on their investment over the years, it would be well over several trillion. And now they wanted to dictate his personal life? No. The injustice lodged in his gut like a stone. He forced himself upright and waved a hand toward them. "Marriage and stability aren't going to suddenly make me better at my job. Have you not studied the prospectus? Your return on investment would be astronomical, much more than you've ever earned on any one of my projects." Another huffed. "We don't need more money. We need to fulfill a promise." Still another chimed in. "We've done our homework. We know your company is stretched thin. You need our money more than we need another investment that could tank while you're at the helm. But most of all, we want to clear the slate of our promise to your father." Adam narrowed his gaze at the pompous man. He had an inkling the man was the ringleader for all the other men in the group. Whatever he recommended, they'd all follow suit. Their rationale didn't make any sense. He had proved himself too many times to count, but he couldn't afford to anger the five power brokers or question the validity of their claim of a promise made to his father. Dad was dead and time was short. Scheduling difficulties had delayed their meeting and made it impossible for Adam to quietly look for other investors. They'd been after him for years to marry, but he laughed and told them he was married to his work. He'd been blasé about it, too, never once questioning why they wanted him to find a wife. He should have, but he hadn't. His attitude had bitten him in the butt. They had waited for the right time and then pounced on the opportunity like a cougar playing with its prey. Between the 24 projects he had going and the constant headache over the development of the 500 acres outside the city and rounding up capital for the Dubai project, he'd taken his finger off the pulse of the investors, and they'd ambushed him. Losing the land deal would be like burying his father a second time. Thoughts clashed like wrecking balls, destructive and unstoppable. He lifted his chin and forced himself not to roll his shoulders. "What's the time frame?" The ringleader cleared his throat. "You don't need the money for another 6 months. We'll use that as a deadline, and our agreement will be kept confidential out of respect for you." "I appreciate that, thank you." "Don't do me any favors." Dad was gone, and there were no answers. Just a silent void where questions echoed. Was it going to be his legacy? A twisted obligation passed down through powerful men with fond memories and iron wills? We expect a decision either way by the end of the month. Adam sprawled in his chair and gave them a whatever stance, but he was anything but nonchalant, and he wouldn't shake their hands. They forced him into a situation he was not prepared for. His mother would be chastising his father for creating such a monster of a problem for Adam. The five industry titans rose in unison, picked up their packet of papers and laptops, and left the room, shutting the door with a quiet click. Seething, he collapsed into silence and couldn't believe what he'd been tasked to do before those men would support him with their money. His lunch gurgled in his stomach and made him queasy. Without a marriage, they would back out of the deal of the century, and he could kiss both the Dubai project and the 500-acre development that was his dad's dream goodbye. Father and son's dreams had collided, and Adam refused to toss one. Marriage had not been on his radar in over 15 years. His fiancée had seen to it with little effort. The women since? Nothing more than polished shadows at formal events, forgettable and transactional. What those investors demanded was darn near impossible and against everything he held dear. He couldn't possibly meet a woman and marry her within 6 months. He certainly couldn't tell his assistant or his attorney about the major kink. They'd laugh in his face. Could he buy a woman for a short-term marriage? Nah. If it was 100 years ago, maybe. Not today. Even if it were an option, the distastefulness of it rankled. How could his father have set such a disaster in motion? Adam moved to the window, braced his palms against the cool metal frame, and clutched the window frame tighter. His jaw clenched as if grief itself might spill out. He stared at the rushing clouds, unsure if they mirrored the storm inside him or the one yet to come. "Dad? Mom?" he whispered to the heavens. "I can't lose the company. Or your dream." 6 months. One impossible ultimatum. It was both or bust.
Thanks for listening to The Romantic Side of Suspense with Sarah Hammerker. If you enjoyed this episode, please leave a review. You can sign up to receive notifications of upcoming podcasts and listen to previous editions at sarahhammerkerfiction.com.